ಓಂ ಶ್ರೀ ಪರಮಾತ್ಮನೇ ನಮಃ. ಮೂಕಂ ಕರೋತಿ ವಾಚಾಲಂ ಪಂಗುಂ ಲಂಘಯತೆ ಗಿರಿಂ ಯತ್ಕೃಪಾತಮಹಂ ವಂದೇ ಪರಮಾನಂದ ಮಾಧವಂ. ಯಂ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ವರುಣೇಂದ್ರ ರುದ್ರ ಮರುತಃ ಸ್ತುನ್ವಂತಿ ದಿವ್ಯೈಸ್ತವೈಃ ವೇದೈ ಸಾಂಗ ಪದಕ್ರಮೋಪನಿಷದೈಃ ಗಾಯಂತಿ ಯಂ ಸಮಗಾಃ ಧ್ಯಾನಾವಸ್ಥಿತ ತದ್ಗತೇನ ಮನಸಾ ಪಶ್ಯಂತಿ ಯಂ ಯೋಗಿನೋ ಯಸ್ಯಾಂತಂ ನ ವಿದುಸುರಾಸುರಗಣಾಃ ದೇವಾಯ ತಸ್ಮೈ ನಮಃ. ಓಂ ಶ್ರೀ ಪರಮಾತ್ಮನೇ ನಮಃ. In this concluding chapter, 18th of Bhagavad Gita, known as Upakrama, Upasamhara Adhyayaha, a chapter which presents the summary of the contents of entire Bhagavad Gita, here we have come up to verse number 39. In the previous class we saw what is Sattvikam Sukham, Ajasam Sukham and Tamasam Sukham. Sattvic happiness, Ajasic happiness and Tamasic happiness. So, what have some pleasure in fact? Sattva. Sattvic, Tamasic, Ajasic pleasures. So, we have seen who is Sattvika Karta, Ajasa Karta, Tamasa Karta. What is Ajasic Karma, Tamasic Karma, Sattvikam Karma. So we are understanding karma, karta, sukham, everything in terms of predominance of gunas. So this itself is for us to understand. If we are predominantly sattvic or rajasic, our behavior, what sort of karta we are, what sort of karma we do, what sort of sukham we enjoy, etc. It helps us to analyze our own nature, to understand whether we are predominantly sattvic, rajasic or tamasic. If we are predominantly tamasic, then we should see it by converting, we have to become predominantly rajasic. If we are predominantly rajasic, our efforts must be to convert ourselves into predominantly sattvic. If we are predominantly sattvic, then we must make sure that thing to discover the truth and to improve ourselves to become qualified for the attainment of truth, attainment of the knowledge of the truth. So that must be, then in keeping with the predominance, our focus also must be diverted. That is the idea. The Bhagavad Gita presents everything, discuss everything in terms of the predominance of guna. Or in keeping with the predominance of gunas, how a person is. Now, the 40th verse we are going to see. Having discussed three types of sukham in the previous verses, Bhagavan is going to conclude his discussion of subject matter in keeping with predominance of gunas. That is, Bhagavan will conclude his discussion of sattvic, rajasic, tamasic division in this verse, 40th verse. Natadasti prithivyam va ದಿವಿ ದೇವೇಷು ವಾ ಪುನಃ ನತದಸ್ತಿ ಪೃಥಿವ್ಯಾಂ ವಾ ದಿವಿ ದೇವೇಷು ವಾ ಪುನಃ ಸತ್ವಂ ಪ್ರಕೃತಿ ಜೈರ್ಮುಕ್ತಂ ಯದೇಭಿಃ ಸ್ಯಾತ್ ತ್ರಿಭಿರ್ಗುಣೈಃ. As I said earlier, after completing this 18th chapter, then we will take important topics from the different chapters and we will discuss for our real clarity, really to to see what all we have seen in Bhagavad Gita. We have seen everything, so many things. But what exactly we have seen in different chapters, what important, etc., we'll analyze again after completing this chapter. Natadasti prithivyam va divi deveshu va punaha sattvam prakruti jair muktam yade bhisyatri bhargunaihi natadasti prithivyam va devi deveshu va punaha sattvam prakruti jair muktam yade bhisyatri bhargunaihi natadasti prithivyam va devi deveshu va punaha sattvam prakruti jair muktam yade bhisyatri bhargunaihi. Now, deveshu va divi va punaha prithivyam asti na tat sattvam yatsyat. Na tad asti prithivyam. Na tad asti prithivyam. Prithivyam on the earth. Na tadasti. Tad sattvam na asti. There is no sattvam, means there is no such entity. Sat, please make a note. The word sattvam here means the entity. Na tad asti prithivyam. Na divi deveshu va punaha. What Bhagavan says, deveshu va means among the gods. Divi in the heaven. Va are punaha. Punaha, among the beings, that implies punaha, va punaha, prithivyam, prithivyam means on the earth, means what? Or among the beings of the earth, prithivyam means on the earth implies of, on the, or among the people of the earth, among the gods, or in the heaven, or among the beings of the earth, prithivyam, asti there is, na tat sattvam. There is no such entity among the gods or in heaven or among the beings of the earth. There is no such entity which is yat syat, that which is muktam ebihi tribihi gunaihi. Ebihi muktam ebihi tribihi gunaihi means which is free from these three gunas. My God, it looks, sounds very difficult. Really speak, what Bhagavan says. Other than the Atma, other than the abstract formless reality, other than the abstract formless reality implied by the term Atma, there's nothing in the world which is free from Trigunas. This is the only one sentence, just second sentence. Okay, in this lesson, Atma is the only thing which is free from Trigunas. Atma is the only thing which is free from Trigunas means what? Nothing in the world is free from Trigunas. Not only is in the world, even in heaven. So Divi, there's no being, there's no entity in the heaven which is free from Trigunas. There's nothing in the world which is free from Trigunas. That's what it said. Nothing in the world. So, no Prithivyam Divi Devesha. Among the Devas, there's none, nothing which is free from three gunas. Prithivyam, on the earth, among the beings of the earth, there's nothing which is free from three gunas. Divi, in the heaven, nothing which is free from three gunas. So, tribihi gunaihi muktam, tribihi gunaihi muktam means free from three gunas. Yad tribihi gunaihi muktam, that which is free from three gunas, which gunas? Prakriti jaihi, that which is free from three gunas, products of prakriti. So, there's nothing which is free from three gunas, the products of prakriti. There's no entity at all. There's nothing which is not, which is free from three gunas. Among the gods in the heaven or among the beings of the earth, there's no entity which is free from three gunas. This is the meaning of this word. Prithivyamva divi deveshva punaha yat sattvam asti yat sattvam tad yat prakriti jaihi muktam sattvam tribihi prakriti jaihi tribihi gunaihi muktam yad asti yat sattvam asti tat na asti, that is not there. Instead of saying is Atma is the only thing which is free from gunas, instead of saying Atma is the only thing which is free from gunas, in the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavan says differently. Nothing in the world, among the beings, there's no entity which is free from three gunas. Among the beings of the heaven, nothing is free from gunas. What does it mean? In the whole of the universe, not only in this Bhuloka, even any of the lokas, there's no entity, no being, nothing in the world. Nothing is free from the three gunas, the products of prakriti. What does it mean? It is the Atma. It is the Atma which does not come under the category of the world. Okay? Because Atma is the knower of the world. The knower of the world is Atma. The entire world comes under the category of the known. The entire universe which comes under the entirety of the objective universe, which comes under the category of the known, is material product. Therefore, there's nothing in the world which is free from three gunas. Anything and everything which is product of matter is three gunas. Nothing is free from three gunas. It is the knower Atma, which does not come under the category of the known material world, alone is free from three gunas. That is the meaning implied here. So we can understand Bhagavan's teaching, Bhagavan's discussion on the topic of three gunas, in terms of division of three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas, comes to an end here in this verse. So, jnanam, karma, karta, buddhihi, sukham. Jnanam, karma, karta, buddhihi, sukham. All these, Bhagavan discussed these topics in keeping with the predominance of gunas. Now here Bhagavan says in this concluding verse on the topic of gunas, Bhagavan says, even Bhagavan means that even though Bhagavan had taken these topics such as jnanam, karma, karta, knowledge, action, doer, buddhi, sukham, etc., all these topics Bhagavan had taken for discussion, then the Bhagavan has taken those topics only as sample topics. What does it mean? Not just only jnanam, karma, karta are subject to three gunas. What Bhagavan means is, everything in this universe, everything, the entirety of the cosmos, including one's body, minds and complex, we can say the entirety of the objective universe can be divided into three, into that which is of three types of beings. Three types. So what Bhagavan means is, not only those topics which have been discussed can be divided into three groups, in keeping with the predominance of gunas, the whole jagat can be divided into three types, in keeping with the predominance of gunas. So animals also can be divided into three: a sattvic animal, rajasic animal, tamasic animal. So the whole jagat can be created into three based on the three gunas, division in three gunas. In fact, the entire universe is nothing but product of three gunas. What I want to say, Maya, the unmanifest power of reality, is one unmanifest, undifferentiated power of the reality. When the Maya or Prakriti manifest alone is in the form of three powers: the power of knowledge, power of activity, power of inertia. So, Jnana Shaktihi, Kriya Shaktihi, Dravya Shaktihi, the power of knowledge, the power of activity, power of inertia, manifest alone are known as three gunas. The entire universe being product of Prakriti, the entire universe is endowed with three gunas. There's nothing within the universe which is free from three gunas. And we know very well, Maya or Prakriti is the inseparable power of reality, the material aspect of the Bhagavan. Bhagavan's power, Bhagavat Shakti, Maya or matter, is the alone, is said to be the material cause of the universe. Means the entire universe is nothing but Maya manifest is the universe. The universe unmanifest is Maya. If Maya is of three gunas, therefore, the universe, the product of Maya, is also of three gunas. Because karanasya gunaha karye anuvartante, the attributes of the cause are in the attributes of the universe also, because universe is attributes of the cause are found as the attributes of the effect. Because the universe being the karyam, Maya being the karanam, the Maya's gunas are very much in the universe, the effect. So the constituents of the cause are the constituents of the effect. Okay, this is the law. The law says, according to the law, the constituents of the cause are the constituents of the effect. That we cannot change. So Maya's constituents, the three powers manifest alone, are three gunas, the constituents of the effect, the universe, the entire universe. Therefore, all that is here is nothing but three gunas in the form of the universe. Even though everything in the universe is of three gunas, still there are differences in the universe. And the difference is all are three gunas, then the differences in the three guna, in the world, everything is three gunas. The differences is in fact, the differences among all the things in the world are caused by the difference in the proportion of the three gunas. The difference in the proportion of the three gunas cause the differences in the creation. I'm repeating my sentence. The differences in the proportion of the three gunas cause the differences in the creation. This I don't know whether I explained to you earlier or not. Please listen to me carefully. We have first the inert. Let us take the entire world can be divided into chara, achara, prapanchaha, charachara, prapanchaha, characharam, jagat. Now let us take acharam, inert, inanimate beings. So all the inanimate beings, inert objects, consist of trigunas. But in all those inert, inanimate, non-living things, three gunas are there, but tamoguna is predominant. Tamoguna is highly predominant in all the non-living things. And the tamoguna being highly predominant proves that all of them are of inert, very, very inert. Then, from all the, okay, now we leave the inert non-living things. What about the plants? Among all the living things, now we can understand among of all the inanimate non-living things are inert, means the inertness itself is because of their predominant predominance of the tamoguna. They are predominant, they are tamasic. Now, if we take all the living beings, among the living beings, now let us say sthavara. Sthavara here means the immobile, unmoving living creatures. Unmoving living being, unmoving, immobile living beings are plants. And if we take the entire, the kingdom of plants, the vegetation, the world of plants and vegetation, the plants have life. Plants are animate. Plants are living. Plants have life. But still, even though plants are life, and plants are alive, plants have life, plants are living beings, still, the plants with the life also, they're as good as inanimate beings. As good as means they're also, they're all like the inert beings. Plants only move. Plants are capable of, plants do not move from one place to the another. That's all. Plants also predominantly tamasic in nature. But what is the difference? The living beings, plants also, tamas is predominant. Tamas is dominant. Non-living things also tamas is dominant. But what is the difference? The proportion. Okay. The difference in proportion of the tamoguna differentiates the animals and plants, the non-living things and plants. If so, all those, the non unmoving, stationary material products, inert material products, material things such as mountains, walls, bricks, oceans, etc. They're all unmoving, stationary, but the tamoguna is predominant in all of them. And even in non-living things, there is sattvagunaha, there is rajogunaha. But how much the proportion of the rajoguna and tamoguna in non-living things is very, very little. Very little. Therefore, the tamoguna, the highly dominant tamoguna, really overpowers the rajoguna and sattvaguna totally. Therefore, they are inert, completely inert, the non-living things. But the plants, though they're living beings, but in plants also have tamoguna, rajoguna, sattvaguna. But the proportion of the predominance of there's a difference in predominance of the proportion of tamoguna between plants and living beings. Now, if we take the mobile living beings, animals, there's difference between plants and animals. In animals also, tamoguna is predominant. See, non-living things, tamoguna is predominant. Hattam and Rajas are completely overpowered. In living beings, plants also tamoguna is predominant, but the proportion of other gunas, the difference in proportion of other gunas. In animals also, animals, living beings also, all three gunas are there. In animals also, tamoguna is predominant. Other two gunas are very little. Then what's the difference? In all of them, tamoguna is predominant. But there's a difference in proportion of the tamoguna. There's a difference in the proportion of the other gunas also. So animals, even though animals are predominantly tamasic, animals also have rajoguna and sattvaguna. But still, in animals, rajoguna is predominant. Tamoguna also is there, relatively lesser. Sattvaguna also is relatively overpowered. Therefore, animals are capable of understanding the environment. They know what is there around them. They know how to live their lives knowing the environment, knowing the surroundings, knowing the atmosphere. So all animals are blessed with adequate intelligence to live their lives. Whether ants or butterflies or buffaloes or elephants or dolphins or fish, all the living creatures are blessed with adequate knowledge to live their lives. And that knowledge is what? The sattva. The sattva is relatively more expressed than non-living things and other plants. That does not mean they're totally sattvic. This difference in proportion of the gunas, the difference in the beings is in keeping with the difference in the proportion of the gunas. Gunas do differ in their proportions. For what Bhagavan says in this verse, the end entirety of the universe can be classified into three based on the difference in the predominance of trigunas, based on the difference in the proportion of the trigunas. Therefore, he says nothing in the world, not even in it, in the heaven, in the devas, among the devas in the heaven, or beings are among the beings of this world, there's no such entity which is free from trigunas. Please make a note, the word sattvam in second line does not mean sattvaguna, means the entity or the being. There's no being, no entity which is free from trigunas in this entire world of objects. Okay. If the tamas is highly predominant, then that matter, the matter with highly predominant tamas, is not capable of manifesting consciousness. It means consciousness does not become reflected. Consciousness is not reflected in highly predominantly tamasic matter. That's why even in the non-living things, consciousness is, but it is not reflected. There's no manifestation of consciousness in the non-living things because there is no subtle matter. And if we see in the physical, human, on all the living beings, this manifestation of consciousness, reflection of consciousness, the reflection of consciousness, the manifestation of consciousness in living beings such as consciousness is totally unmanifested in non-living things because there's no manifestation is not possible because of subtle. So consciousness is available for recognition. Consciousness can be recognized only where it is manifest. In living beings, sukshma is there, subtle aspect is there. Therefore, manifestation or reflection of consciousness is possible. But there again, the level of manifestation of consciousness, there's a difference in the level of manifestation of consciousness in keeping with the difference in the reflecting medium is subtle. That's why the level of manifestation of consciousness in animals is different from the level of manifestation of consciousness in the plants. And among all the human living beings also, the level of manifestation of consciousness in human beings is the highest. It means the highest form of manifestation of consciousness is only in the human mind. Our own physical body, gross physical body, is predominantly tamasic. Therefore, it is much grosser. There's no manifestation of consciousness, which means it is in the human mind. There is manifestation of consciousness. If the consciousness manifests in the human mind alone becomes further manifest in the much gross body also. So what I want to say here, sattvaguna, rajoguna, tamoguna are there in everything. Nothing which is free from. It is the pure consciousness alone is absolutely unmixed or free from the trigunas. Because trigunas, I told you, trigunas are the names attributed to the three powers manifest. The three powers are unmanifest. Then there's one undifferentiated unmanifest power known as Maya. When the Maya becomes manifest, there are three powers, differentiated powers manifest. When the power is manifest, the three differentiated manifest powers, and they are known as Sattvaguna, Rajoguna, and Tamoguna. So elements, elementals, living beings, non-living things, all the beings can be divided into beings of Trigunas. So Prakriti Jaihi Gunaihi Vimuktaha Vimuktam Sattvam Nasti, means there's no entity among the beings of the world, or among the celestial, among the devas of the heaven, which is free from Trigunas. Okay. All the 14 worlds also you have to include. Guna Titaha, Nirgunaha is, Nirgunaha is only Atma. Now, 41st verse. Brahmana Kshatriya Visham Shudranam Cha Parantapa. Because people guna means people think something, them gunas, don't worry. Gunas means your body is nothing but gunas, your mind is gunas, your sense organs are gunas, okay, pranas are gunas. Whatever you see in the world, whatever you see, whatever you hear, whatever you smell, whatever you taste, everything is gunas, gunas, gunas. But why there's difference? Difference among beings and things is because of the difference in the proportion of gunas. Okay? And the nirgunaha, absolutely that which is free from gunas, is the abstract, formless Atma, the consciousness. And one who understands this fact is said to be gunatita. Okay, next one. Brahmana Kshatriya Visham Shudranam Chaparantapa Karmano Pravibhaktani Swabhava Prabhavair Gunaihi Brahmana Kshatriya Visham Shudranam Chaparantapa Shudranam cha parantapa karmani pravibhaktani swabhava prabhavair gunaihi brahmana kshatriya visham shudranam cha parantapa karmani pravibhaktani swabhava prabhavair gunaihi. So, gunaihi swabhava prabhavaihi. Please make a note. Karmani pravibhaktani. The word swabhava in this context means prakriti. Please make a note. The word prabhava here means prakriti, maya. Swabhava prabhavaihi gunaihi means by the gunas born of prakriti, it means by karmani pravibhaktani. Karmani means all the activities in terms of duties. Karmani, all activities in terms of duties, means all duties, pravibhaktani, have been divided or allotted. All the activities in terms of duties are divided or allotted. How? Swabhava prabhavaihi gunaihi. In keeping with the gunas born of prakriti. All duties are allotted according to the gunas, products of prakriti. Now, Brahma Kshatriya Visham சூத்ராணாம்ச பரந்தப. சோ பிரம்ம பிராமணாஸ் க்ஷத்ரியாஸ் அண்ட் வைஷ்யாஸ். பிரம்ம ஸ்ரீ பிரம்மண ஸ்ரீ பிராமண க்ஷத்ரிய விஷாம் பிராமண பிராமண க்ஷத்ரிய விஷாம் மீன்ஸ் பிராமணாஸ் க்ஷத்ரியாஸ் வைஷ்யாஸ் ச அண்ட் சூத்ராணாம். கர்மாணி பிரவிபக்தானி பிராமண க்ஷத்ரிய விஷாம் சூத்ராணாம் ச பரந்தப. பரந்தப ஹே அர்ஜுனா, ஆல் ஆக்டிவிட்டீஸ் இன் டர்ம்ஸ் ஆஃப் டியூட்டீஸ் டியூட்டீஸ் பிரவிபக்தானி ஆர் divided and allotted how according to the gunas, according to the gunas products of prakriti, according to the gunas born of prakriti, all activities in terms of duties are divided and allotted to brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas and shudras. Brahmana க்ஷத்ரிய விஷாம் சூத்ராணாம் ச கர்மாணி பிராமண க்ஷத்ரிய விஷாம் ச சூத்ராணாம் ச கர்மாணி பரிபக்தானி ஸ்வபாவ ப்ரவைஹி குணைஹி. சோ வாட் பகவான் சேஸ், த டிவிஷன் ஆஃப் டியூட்டீஸ் ஆர் தி அலாட்மெண்ட் ஆஃப் டியூட்டீஸ் to brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, etc., or people of all classes, allotment of duties to people of different classes is based on the gunas born of prakriti, or according to the gunas born of prakriti. Why something is said to be brahmanas duty, how something is said to be kshatriyas duty, why something is said to be shudras duty, why is said to be vaishyas duty, why? Who determines this? Who decides this? Who allots these duties? There's none who is allotting these duties. All the duties, all activities are allotted to people of all classes respectively. People of all classes, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Shudras, okay, based according to the gunas, according to the gunas born of prakriti. Therefore, now, please let me remind you, all these verses from now on, from this 41st verse onwards, from the 41st verse onwards, Bhagavan is going to present the summary of two central important themes of Bhagavad Gita again. So please be prepared to re-listen to the teaching, okay? Don't tell me Swamiji is repeating and making us feel bored. Don't say that. I'm not going to repeat, okay? What I'm going to repeat is repetition of Bhagavan Krishna. Okay, Bhagavan Krishna repeats, so I have to repeat. Now, what from this 41st verse onwards, now we are going to see how Bhagavan is beautifully presents the summary of two important main central themes of the Shastra teaching, especially teaching of Bhagavad Gita. Two main important central themes of the Bhagavad Gita is going to be discussed, how summarized by Bhagavan. And Bhagavan himself discussed the two main themes when he began this 18th chapter. When the 18th chapter is begun, the very beginning itself, Bhagavan discussed these two main themes of Bhagavad Gita. And why should Bhagavan repeat the whole Bhagavad Gita he discussed? And those two main themes Bhagavan already discussed in the introduction, in the introductory portion of the Bhagavad Gita, that is in the beginning of the 18th chapter. Of course, we know in keep as that those themes are very important. Bhagavan discussed in the beginning of the 18th chapter. And now again, Bhagavan is going to summarize those two central main themes of Bhagavad Gita. Okay. So Bhagavan's presentation of summary of the two central themes of Bhagavad Gita is going to be in the light of the knowledge of gunas. The two main central themes of the Bhagavad Gita is going to be summarized in the light of the knowledge of three gunas. Of course, you all know very well the two main central themes of Bhagavad Gita teaching are nothing but Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. So what is Karma Yoga? Karma Yoga is nothing but an eternal way of life, Sanatanaha Dharmaha, the way of life ordained by the Shastram. The Sanatanaha Dharmaha is Karma Yoga. Why Karma Yoga is said to be Sanatanaha Dharmaha? Because it is an eternal way of life. Why is it said to be eternal way of life? Because that way of life is suitable, acceptable, acceptable for all people of all times and all places and all cultures. Therefore, Karma Yoga, the way of life enjoined by the Shastra, is said to be Karma Yoga, which involves a proper attitude and commitment to Dharma. So, in living a life of Karma Yoga, a person lives his life doing his duties prayerfully, worshipfully, but consciously in conformity with Dharma. Therefore, simply by living a life of Karma Yoga, by merely following the lifestyle enjoined by the Shastram, by way of living a life of Karma Yoga, anyone who lives a life of Karma Yoga becomes a person of constructive contributory activities. A person who lives a life of Karma Yoga becomes a person of constructive activities. So when a person lives his life following the way of life known as Karma Yoga, thereby being contributive, constructive, the person becomes mentally pure and steady. So such lifestyle helps a person to become mentally pure and steady. So what Bhagavan wants to say, living a life of Karma Yoga means doing one's duties, having Bhagavan as the ultimate goal, prayerfully, worshipfully, in conformity with Dharma, means a person follows the religious disciplines. Living a life of Karma Yoga means being spiritual, religious, and ethical. So living a life of Karma Yoga means being spiritual, religious, and ethical. And this, living a life of Karma Yoga as a spiritual, religious, ethical person is ultimately to prepare one's mind to have mental purification ultimately for the attainment of jnanam. So accomplishment of eligibility for attaining jnanam is possible only when a person goes through, lives a life of karma yoga. And living a life of karma yoga is a life of activities. So living a life of karma yoga, being a life of activities with a commitment to dharma, the karma yogi is a person of extroverted life, highly active life. Known as pravrittihi. Therefore, what Bhagavan says, there's no human being who can escape. All human beings or every individual being has to follow this way of life known as karma yoga. Merely by living life karma yoga, one can contribute to the social welfare, social wellness. Because a karma yogi who's totally committed to live a life of dharma is a highly sensitive person. Therefore, the life of every fraction of second of a life of karma yogi as he lives he knows that he takes the life from the objective universe. So karma yogi is conscious, thoughtful of the fact that he survives only because of the contribution of the earth. Therefore, every fraction of second he lives, he is conscious that every fraction of second he lives, he is taking everything from the creation. While breathing, oxygen is taken. While drinking, water is taken. While eating food in the form of vegetation is taken. Therefore, everything is taken, everything is given to us. Therefore, if we understand, without paying anything back, without asking for, we are blessed with oxygen for breathing, water for drinking, food for eating. If we think and see, naturally, thoughtfully, we feel very, very much indebted to Bhagavan in the form of devatas. We feel very much indebted to all the objects of this creation, in this creation. See, when we live this life, every fraction of second, okay, we live this life, we should not forget that the life we live now is because of the mercy of devatas. Bhagavan's mercy in the form of devatas enables us live our life, every fraction of second of our life. Therefore, if we think, is there anything in terms of my compensation? Is there anything in terms of my contribution? Is there anything, any compensation on my part? is any contribution on my part. Why? Because every fraction of second I live in this world, I am that life is because of the contribution of Bhagavan of Devatas, natural phenomena. If I am taking everything from society, everything from the phenomena, natural phenomena, as living intelligent human beings, when we take everything from natural phenomena, everything we take from the nature, everything we take from Bhagavan of Devatas, means it's very important for us to understand whether there is compensation or contribution on my part. When we understand that there is compensation or contribution on my part for everything I take from this world, when we see this, understand this fact, only then we can understand that there is a purposeful life. We can understand that we all have lived a purposeful, meaningful life. If a person has a sense of even slightest degree of fulfillment, if a person has a sense of even slightest degree of fulfillment, then definitely it is possible only if a person has the person's self-esteem and self-image has increased. It means the self-image will increase, will change, the self-esteem will increase. If a person is conscious that there is a certain degree of contribution to the society, there has been some purposeful contribution to the society, to this creation, the beings around. If a person has that understanding that there is a purposeful contribution to the creation, then the person will feel the increase of one's own self-image. Because whenever we share, give something or the other, we offer something, we lend any help, okay, we do something good to the beings around, definitely there will be some sense of fulfillment. Therefore, living a life of karma yoga alone is a spiritual living a life of karma yoga alone makes a person spiritual, religious, ethical person. Thereby, living a life of karma yoga alone makes one's life a purposeful, useful, complete life. And living such purposeful, meaningful, complete life in terms of living life karma yoga is very much important for one's emotional maturity, intellectual sharpness, emotional stability. And is living a life of karma yoga, living a life of karma yoga, going to discipline of karma yoga means extroverted life. Because life of activities means the person who is involved in activities must be extrovert in his life. Okay. Now what about the jnana yoga? Of course, jnana yoga is the attainment of jnanam. involving three steps, Shravanam, Manam, Nidhyasam, etc. And assimilation of the teaching, enjoyment of the benefit of the teaching is very easy. It's not at all difficult. But the difficulty is only in preparing the mind for that understanding, for which, you know, Karma Yoga is the only means. This much we have already understood. Therefore, Jnana Yoga is Jnana Yoga involving three steps or stages. Shravana, Manana, Nidhyasana is the only means of attaining Jnanam. Jnanam itself is the culmination of the worship and prayer. Jnanam is the absolute accomplishment in the life. All this we know very well. I have just repeated what you already know. Therefore, when a person lives a life of Karma Yoga, he is a person of pravritti. When a person is going to recipient of Jnana Yoga, then there is nivritti. Now, Bhagavan wants to teach in a nutshell these two disciplines, okay, from this 44th verse onwards until the 49th verse. So in 9 verses, Bhagavan is going to present a brief summary of Karma Yoga, okay, emphasizing the importance of doing one's own duties. So in the 41st verse onwards until the 49th verse, Bhagavan is going to present the summary of Karma Yoga in a nutshell, emphasizing the importance of doing one's own duties consciously. So what Bhagavan says, we need not do anything specially to contribute for the social harmony, the universal harmony, to contribute for the betterment of creation. Bhagavan means it's enough. All that you need to do is understand the way of life called Karma Yoga and to live thoughtfully, consciously, okay, prayerfully, a life of Karma Yoga. Okay, by living in Karma Yoga is the only way of contributing something or the other to the creation. So without living a life of Karma Yoga, there cannot be contribution of something to the creation. So when we want to know how successful we are, how accomplished, how much we have achieved. So if we have to measure our success, if we have to measure our accomplishments in terms of what we have accomplished, so if we measure our success in terms of what we have accomplished or achieved, is not going to be enough. Means simply measuring our success achievements in terms of what we have accomplished, what we have achieved, is not sufficient. It's not enough. Because material prosperity can be measured in terms of what we have accumulated, what we have gained. So material prosperity, being successful materially, is measured in terms of what we have gained, how much the person has grown materially. So material prosperity, accomplishment is measured in terms of what all we have accumulated, what all we have gained. So externally whatever is measured, so our material prosperity, material accomplishments are always measured based on how much you have. Our material prosperity, material growth is measured based on what we have accumulated, what we have gained. Whereas spiritual progress, I'm repeating my sentence, our external material prosperity, material success, material growth is measured in terms of what we have accumulated, what we have gained. Whereas one spiritual growth, inner maturity is measured, spiritual growth, spiritual accomplishment is measured in terms of what we have given. The spiritual growth is measured in terms of what has been given. Material growth is measured based on what we have gained. So material growth being external is dependent on one's position. Whereas internal maturity, so external development depends upon one's position. Whereas internal maturity growth depends upon one's disposition, mental disposition. So external material growth is dependent on one's enjoyment, whereas inner maturity is dependent on one's dedication and sacrifice. Remember what Bhagavan is going to say? Contributing for this social welfare is possible only when you live a life of dharma. Thereby, when you contribute, mental preparedness is possible, contribution to society is possible only when you live a life of karma yoga. And contribution also must be in any one given field. If a person makes efforts to contribute in different fields, and he will get confused. So one must contribute, and one's contribution must be in one given field, then it is possible. Yes, everyone is blessed with adequate capacity to contribute in one given field. If a person wants to contribute in different fields, if he chooses many, then he will be confused. And the field of contribution one chooses must be based on one's inclination and one's aptitude. As a doctor, you can contribute. As an engineer, you can contribute. As a lawyer, you can contribute. As an accountant, you can contribute. As an IT person, you can contribute. So, choosing one given field, one can contribute without any confusion. So choosing to be a contributor in many fields will result in confusion. So, whichever field a person wants to choose to be contributive must be based on one's choice of a field, one's choice of field for one's contribution must be based on one's inclination, aptitude. Based on the predominance of guna, one's aptitude and inclination will be. So based on the predominance of guna, one's aptitude and inclination will be. And in keeping with the inclination aptitude, one must choose the field of contribution. If sattva-guna is predominant, whether rajoguna is predominant or tamoguna is predominant, in keeping with the predominance of the guna, based on the predominance of guna, one's inclination and aptitude will be there. In keeping one's aptitude and inclination, one must choose any given field of activity to contribute for the social wellness. Therefore, Bhagavan, in the form of universal natural moral law and order, has ordained this world with people of four groups. So Bhagavan Krishna presents here the divisions. Bhagavan Krishna here discusses the topic of division of the entirety of the humanity. That there are four people of four groups. There are people of four groups. In terms of Brahmanaha, Kshatriyaha, Vaishyaha, and Shudraha. So people who are predominantly sattvic in nature and whose second predominant guna is Rajas, and in whom Tamas is in the third place, they are Brahmanaha. We can say Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. If the predominance of gunas is in this order, Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, Sattva in first place, Rajas in second place, Tamas in third place, SRT. And those people are said to be Brahmanaha. If Rajas is the first guna, people are predominantly Rajasic, Sattva has a second place, Tamas is in the third place, they are Kshatriyas. RST. Rajas in the first place, Tamas, Sattva in second place, Tamas in third place means they are Kshatriyas. If Rajas is in first place, if Tamas is in second place and Sattva is in third place, they are Vaishyas, RTS. And if Tamas is in first place, Rajas is in second place, Sattva is in third place, if the people are predominantly Tamasic, backed by Rajoguna, with the Sattvaguna in the third place, then they are Shudraha. Therefore, this classification of human, the division of entire humanity, in terms of Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, Brahmanas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, is based on the difference in proportion of gunas. So, people who are predominantly sattvic, with rajoguna in second place and tamoguna in the third place, naturally they're brahmanaha. And people of such guna, people who are of the proportion of gunas such a way, predominantly sattvic people, are naturally quiet people. Quiet people are active, but not physically very active. And they naturally have very meditative mental disposition. And people are predominantly rajasic, the kshatriyaha. And who have rajoguna in the first place, sattoguna in the second place, tamoguna in the third place. And they are naturally very physically also active. At the same time, they're very active, but they are not very, because they're committed to dharma, therefore they're intelligently selfish people. The people who are very active but committed to dharma means they're intelligently selfish people. And people who are predominantly rajasic, but their tamoguna is the second guna, means sattoguna is in the third place, they are they're also active people, but they are very selfish. Sometimes they're selfish, but they may go against dharma. Therefore, they're foolishly selfish. In fact, kshatriyas are said to be selfless people, active but selfless. Vaishyas are people who are active, but they're selfish. What does it mean? Actually speaking, all are selfish. But people who are highly active but do not go against dharma are intelligently selfish. People who are very active but who go against dharma are foolishly selfish. And the people of tamoguna, people who are predominantly tamasic but who have rajas in second place, tamas in the second place, no, people who are predominantly tamasic in nature and having rajas in second place, sattva in third place, and that people naturally very dull, thereby they lack the capacity to discern. Therefore, they may be involved in activities, they're not very highly, they're not skilled. So they have to be instructed by others that what they should be doing. Anyway, please understand, when the classification of humanity is made, Bhagavan does not consider people of any varna to be inferior, people of any varna to be superior. Bhagavan's interest, or Shastra's interest, is gradually converting every Shudra, every Vaishya, every Kshatriya into a Brahmana. So every Brahmana, by birth, whether a person is a Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, everyone has to become a Brahmana ultimately by nature, not by birth. In order to convert every human being into a Brahmana by nature, enabling him accomplish the ultimate goal is the aim of the Shastram. Shastram is not at all interested in humiliating or humiliating anybody in society. Shastra is not judgmental. Shastra does not look down upon any people of any varna to be inferior or superior. All are one, though all are not equal. According to Shastram, all are one, though all are not equal. And this, that they're not equal because of the difference in proportion of gunas. They're all one because of the essential oneness. Okay, I'm going to stop here now. We are going to see the classification in the So this is what Bhagavan said. Remember, this has been already discussed in the fourth chapter. I'm sure you all remember. Chatur Varnyam Maya Srishtam Gunakarma Vibhagashah Tasya Kartaram Apimam Vidyakartaram Avyayam. This was already discussed in the 13th verse of the fourth chapter. Now Bhagavan again reproduces that teaching beautifully here in his 41st verse, saying Brahmana Kshatriya Visham Shudranam Cha Parantapa Karmani Pravibhaktani Swabhava Prabhavair Gunaihi. So in keeping with the gunas, difference in the proportion of gunas, or according to the gunas, the gunas, the products of prakriti, swabhava prabhavaihi gunaihi, all duties, varna dharmas have been allotted to people of all classes, to brahmana, kshatriyas, vaishyas and shudras. So who allots the duties? Why he should do this? Nobody is allotting duties to any varna, people of any varna. So duties are allotted means people themselves, the choice of the duties is naturally based on the predominance of gunas. So it is said, Bhagavan says here, this allotment of duties to people of all varnas, Brahmana, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, is according to the gunas of prakriti. Gunas born of prakriti. Anyway, after completing the 18th chapter, then we'll have real proper, again, we'll see the summaries of each chapter quickly. And then we can have like good discussions on that. After completing it, I'm going to for some summary which will really throw a lot of clarity. Now it seems you will listen to the same old thing. It may sound like that. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Shri Rubhyo Namaha Hari Om.